I chose a topic today which is obviously connected to Yom Yerushalayim, and I originally named it the Minhag to Read Shir HaShirim on Yom Yerushalayim. It's actually a very strange name for a shir, a very strange title, because as people ask me, what Minhag is there to Read Shir HaShirim on Yom Yerushalayim? So I said, well, that's exactly it. That's exactly the point, that there is no Minhag, even though there is a, those who went to Yeshivat Har Etzion in Gush know that Rabbi Mital, the Rosh Yeshiva of Gush, started his own Minhag since the Six-Day War to read Megillat Shir HaShirim the night of Yom Yerushalayim. So I called it the Minhag of reading Shir HaShirim, even though it's not a very popular Minhag. I don't know anyone else that does it besides the Yeshiva of Gush. Yet I believe that one can learn a lot from this about Yerushalayim and about Yom Yerushalayim. Now I'd like to explore how Shir HaShirim is brought up in many places throughout Jewish history, in many writings of very, very famous philosophers, Rabbanim, and to try to see how through Shir HaShirim we learn about the redemption, about issues to do with redemption, as I'll soon explain. As a short introduction, I'm sure everyone is familiar with the problems related to Shir HaShirim. It is a Megillah that at first glance is very problematic. You ask yourself, what is this Megillah? What is this book doing in the Tanakh? A book describing a romantic affair between a man and a woman with really some graphic descriptions there that really seem very strange at first glance, that it was chosen to be in our holiest of books. And as I'm sure you know, the Mishnah itself, Chazal themselves, argued about this. Some rabbis really did not want it to be put in the Tanakh. And there was a big discussion and a big dispute about this, whether or not it should be considered a Sefer of Kedusha, until it came along Rabbi Akiva. And his famous statement said that Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kodashim. The book of Shir HaShirim is a very holy book. And based upon that, we will continue our discussion. And obviously, we look at this book as a book of Kedusha, as it was put at the end, it was edited in the Tanakh. How should one learn Shir HaShirim? How does one look at that book? Well, this is also another topic, another question which one can discuss a whole shir related to that question. How does one learn Shir HaShirim? Because, as I just said now, the descriptions of this romance really are very hard to understand what Shlomo HaMelech does. Shlomo HaMelech, the writer of this book, really what he really meant. And I believe that there are two ways of looking at Shir HaShirim. One, of course, is learning the pshat, learning the words themselves, understanding the descriptions themselves, what they mean. When Shlomo HaMelech talks about the dod, the ra'aya, let's understand what goes on here in the story of Shir HaShirim. And the second level, of course, is the level of drush, which Chazal really compared the dod and the ra'aya, the two lovers here, to Am Yisrael and the Kadosh Baruch Hu. On the level of pshat, the story is about a man and woman who love each other very much and really wish and hope that their love will really come together one day. But yet, through their relationship, there are many difficulties, and they seem to always miss each other. I'm not going to go right now, we have no time to go in the Pesukim themselves and really read the whole Megillah right now, but I'm sure you're familiar with the Megillah enough to know that they're about to meet, and then suddenly one slips through the window. We find that sometimes the dod is the one who's running away. Sometimes the raya runs away. The dod wishes to bring the raya into the palace, and she says, I'd rather go to Karmei and Gedi, back to nature, back to the fields. There always seems to be a problem of how they meet. It's a love story with not such a simple relationship. And Chazal, of course, explained to us that this story is all about Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Dod being HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Dod in Tanakh is we know that Dod means uncle, and we know that in Jewish law, there is an old minhag, which is not really done today, that an uncle should marry his niece. That's what Chazal tell us, that it's preferable for a uncle to marry his niece. And that's maybe where the idea where the dod comes from, the ultimate type of husband in at the time. And the ra'ya, of course, is Knesset Yisrael, is Am Yisrael, who wish to be God's lover, but yet find too many difficulties in the path of this relationship. Chazal take this story to explain Yitziat Mitzrayim. We see in the Rashot of Chazal how they talk about that when Bnei Yisrael were in Egypt, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned to them and asked them to come with him. When they left Egypt, they felt this love and passion to God, but they found it very difficult to remain faithful to God. It was too great, it was too hard for them. Chet Ha'egel, Chet Ha'Meraglim. The whole story of Am Yisrael throughout the Tanakh is a story of a love, a relationship between as if a man and wife, which always seemed a crisis always seems to come up every so often. Sometimes very big crises, sometimes smaller crises. And Chazal really saw that the majority of Megillat Shir HaShirim, or the beginning of it at least, refers to the stories of the Tanakh of Bnei Yisrael leaving Egypt. Maybe that's the reason why the custom has become a very well-known custom to read Shir HaShirim on Shabbat Chol HaMoed of Pesach. To read, some people read Shir HaShirim the night of Pesach after the Haggadah. My house, that's my father always keeps that minhag. I remember at some point at 1 o'clock, I don't remember what time it is, he sits down to read the Megillah. Maybe that's why, because Shir HaShirim tells us the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. But there's another level of explaining the story of Shir HaShirim, and that is about man as an individual, man's request for God, man searching for God. The story of Shir HaShirim does not maybe describe a historical event, rather describes to us man's search for God and how difficult it sometimes is to feel that closeness to God. There can be many explanations for this, by the way. I'm not going to go into all of them right now. Rav Kook, in one of his famous passages in Orot, describes how difficult it is for us down here to relate to God. And that is because he says, even though our instinct is to grasp God, to love God, as David HaMelech uses the phrase of Tzama nafshi le'elokim le'kelchai. Look at Yidid Nefesh. Yidid Nefesh, the song that we sing on Friday night, talks about how man yearns to become close to God. Tzama nafshi le'elokim le'kelchai, as I just mentioned. Tzimaon, we are thirsty for God, to be close to God, but yet sometimes how hard is it for us to feel God because we are mortal, we are Yasar Vadam. And God is an idea that we can't grasp. We can't understand what God is. We can't touch. We can't feel God. How hard is it to make that relationship happen when one wishes to have a relationship of love between man and God? Rav Kook talks about this in a very interesting way. Some of you might know that Rav Soloveitchik used this idea of Shir HaShirim in his famous book, Ubikashtem Misham. It was just translated recently, I think a year, in the past year, it was translated to English. And Soloveitchik uses the whole theme of Shir HaShirim of showing the difficulties that man has in his search for God. He uses the whole story, he as if rewrites the whole story of Shir HaShirim in a few pages and describes how man yearns so much to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but yet the difficulties that come in the path, that arise in the path of that relationship. So we see that there are two different levels here. One is on the national level, the story of Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and one is on the individual level of man yearning for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the difficulties. I would like now, at this point, to mention a few cases in Jewish history where, as I just mentioned before, some of them, different philosophers, rabbis, who use this theme that we just discussed now to explain certain ideas in to do with Ge'ulah. I wish to begin with actually with Pesach. I just said before that the main reason that we read Shir HaShirim on Pesach is because the story of Shir HaShirim is about Pesach. But I would like to suggest that there's a deeper meaning to the reading of Shir HaShirim on Pesach. When we left Egypt, we were told that we have to eat the matzah b'chipazon. We were told that we have to eat Korban Pesach b'chipazon. We were told that we have to sit with our staffs in our hands, with our shoes on, and we have to be ready to run at any moment given. We know that the symbolic idea of a matzah is that it is bread that's baked in a hurry. A lot of times we think that the reason that we eat matzah is because they bake bread and didn't have time, so it became matzah. But that's not really true, because 2 weeks in advance they were told to prepare the matzah. And why is that? Because the matzah symbolizes chipazon, hurriness, something that should be done quickly. The motif of the night of Pesach is chipazon. And why is that? Why is that such an important idea? I once heard from Rav Yaakov Meidan, the Rosh Yeshiva of Gush, who tried to explain this idea with a very nice mashal. He said that when people wish to travel places, there are different ways of doing so. One could take a bus, a train. What do buses and trains have in common, and airplanes for that matter? That if I miss the timetable and I'm late, then I miss the opportunity to get where I'm going. No train, bus, or plane will wait for you if you are late. Unlike, let's say, a taxi, which sometimes will keep the meter running and it'll wait for you. But says Rav Meidan, there's another way in Israel. It's a very popular way to get places, and that is to stand by the side of the road and pick up your arm and flag down a car. We call it tramping in Israel. It's supposed to tramp. And when I was younger, that was the way I got around, especially in the army when you're in some godforsaken place. And you want to get home for Shabbos, that's probably one of the only ways at the time to get back. But don't worry, today soldiers don't do it anymore, so I know you're a bit concerned there. Soldiers aren't allowed anymore to take trams. When I was young, it was very peaceful times in Israel. What's the difference between taking a tram and taking a bus? It's very simple. Like I said, if you have to be somewhere at a certain place, you can calculate the time that you have to be there based upon the timetable of the bus. But when it comes to a tramp, you stand by the road and you hope for the best. And you can be waiting for hours. You can't plan what time you'll be arriving anywhere. You're totally in the hands of the unknown. Now what happens if you're standing by the side of the road for hours and hours, waiting for that tramp to come, and suddenly when that tramp comes, you are actually sitting on the side already because you've been there for hours, and you take a small schluff. And by the time the car comes there, you wake up really quickly, you run up, and the car sees you or doesn't have time for you to gather your belongings. Or if you start sometimes asking these questions, where are you going? Are you going exactly where I want to go? And I don't know if you know the culture of tramping, but sometimes it can be very aggravating when someone starts questioning exactly where you're going because it doesn't really fit to his plans. We have a joke where I live in Alon Shavuot. In Alon Shavuot, there are two parts now of Alon Shavuot. There's Alon Shavuot Aleph and Alon Shavuot Bet. The joke is that a kid stands in a lot waiting for a tram to Alon Shavuot, and the car stops and says, he says, where are you going? He says, Alon Shavuot. He says, Aleph or Bet? So that's how it is today. People are pretty pampered by the tram today. But anyway, if you're not ready for that tram, you're going to continue waiting on the side of the road. And Rav Meidan explained that the message of the chipazon of Mitzrayim is very simple. You want to be redeemed? You want Hashem to save you? Hashem is not your bus, and He's for sure not your taxi driver. He's not going to wait for you. If you're ready for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you're waiting on the side of the road with your staff on, in your hand, with your shoes on, bechipazon, if you're waiting for Him, then at the moment that He decides that good for Him, bechatzot ha'layla, kechatzot ha'layla, Hashem at midnight, exactly, maybe 2 minutes after midnight, it'll be way too late. We have to wait for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not the other way around. That's the idea of the chipazon of Mitzrayim. And by the way, this can explain also a very strange midrash. In Sefer Bereshit, it says that when Lot was saved by the angels came to Lot's house, and Lot served them what? What did Lot serve the malachim, the angels, that came to warn him about the destruction of Sodom? He gave them matzah. Why was Lot giving them matzah, for goodness sake? So Rashi points out, I'll tell you why. Obviously, it was Pesach night. Pesach night? hundreds of years before we even went to Egypt? The answer is very simple. It's a symbolic idea of Pesach. Because the Malachim are coming to Lot and saying, Lot, God sent us here to tell you that He's about to destroy the city of Sodom. So Lot's first reaction probably was, wow, thank you so much, but listen, if you can push it off by a few days, I really appreciate it, because my kids are finishing, you know, school this week, and I go to work tomorrow, and it's really not convenient for me tomorrow. Lot, it's now. Well, let me gather my things, my belongings. Let's take the family pictures. Lot, it's now. It's Yitziat Mitzrayim b'chipazon. You don't tell God when it's good for Him to save you. If you're ready, come with us. They grabbed him and ran away, and his wife, maybe gathering the family pictures, stayed behind. We know, according to Chazal, that the majority of the Jewish people remained in Mitzrayim. Not all were redeemed. Maybe that's why. Maybe they said, well, it's nice to be redeemed, but we're not ready for the example. Based upon this idea, I want to suggest that maybe that's a deeper meaning of why we read Shir HaShirim and Pesach. Shir HaShirim builds us up towards the whole Megillah about this love, this romance. It's like almost as if watching this kind of, you know, this movie following a story, a romantic story of this couple who writing love letters, who really loves you so much. And at the moment when he knocks on the door, Kamti ani liftoach lidodi, v'dodicha ma kavar. Why? Why did the dod leave? Because I said to myself, says the Raya, oh my gosh, how can I come to the door like this? I'm not prepared, I'm not ready for him. I have to go powder my nose. I have to get ready. I don't know what. I'll be there. Wait. He's ringing the bell. He's knocking on the door. And she responds, wait, I'll be there. And by the time she gets to the door, he's gone. That is a tragedy of Jewish history, says Shir HaShirim. And maybe that's why we read it on Pesach. Because Pesach teaches us the idea of chipazon. The idea that Ge'ulah is something that's in the hands of God, and that we have to be ready for God, whatever point, whatever time He comes, we have to be ready, waiting for Him. Who else used in Jewish history the idea of the Shir HaShirim to emphasize ideas of Ge'ulah? Well, on the other side of the Zionist movement, we have the Satmar Hasidim, who really used, I would say, Shir HaShirim to justify their anti-Zionist ideology. Based upon the Gemara Masechet Ketubot and Daf Kufid Aleph, the Gemara tells us a very famous midrash based upon the pasuk of Shir HaShirim, Yishbati etchem bnot Yerushalayim im ta'iru v'im taru et ahava ad shetechpatz. Bnot Yerushalayim were sworn, they had taken oath, al ta'iru et ahava ad shetechpatz. Based upon this pasuk, says the midrash, six shvot. Tlat ha'ani de amaran. The Gemara talks about three shvot. What are the first three? Shlo ya'alu Yisrael b'choma, ve'achad she'yishbi HaKadosh Baruch Hu et Yisrael shlo yimrdu b'motz ha'olam, ve'achad she'yishbi HaKadosh Baruch Hu et ovdei kochavim shlo yishta'abdu ben b'Yisrael yoter midai. Three oaths, the famous three oaths that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes Am Yisrael and the Goyim take. Interpretation of these oaths are that we cannot awaken the redemption until the time has come. We cannot make aliyah without Hashem telling us it is the time. Based upon this idea of the Geulah of Shir HaShirim, the Rebbe of Satmir, the Yoel Moshe, the book called Vayol Moshe, the Satmir Rebbe wrote a whole theory about this, how the whole Zionist movement who broke this oath was to blame for the terrible Holocaust. I find it very interesting that this is the main argument in the thesis of the Satmar movement. And because I actually feel that it's very good for us to claim the Zionist approach based upon this Midrash. Meaning, it could be that without the Satmar idea, we wouldn't really pay attention to this so much. But actually, I think it really justifies so much the Zionist ideology, and I'll explain in a second. it's very easy to say that this Gemara doesn't really apply in our days. The first and most simple answer which Poskim discussed was, this is a Midrash, it's a nice Midrash, but it's not mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, it's not a Rambam, it's not mentioned in any book of Halacha that we have to consider these oaths when we come to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. Well, that's the easiest way of acclaiming this Midrash. Some Kabbalists, it's mentioned in some places that the oath was only good for 1,000 years. But I think the real answer was given by the Meshech Chochma, Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Meir Simcha, who wrote a letter in the early 20th century, wrote a letter in which he brings up this Gemara, and right after the committee, the League of Nations, who got together in San Remo. This League of Nations was some kind of organization similar to the UN, which was done after First World War. And nations got together, and they accepted the famous Balfour Declaration. Lord Balfour, who gave permission to Jews to return to Eretz Yisrael, and in the League of Nations, this document was accepted by the nations of the world. And says the Meshech Chochma, Sar Pachad Hashvuot. Meaning he took it also seriously. But he says, the event that just occurred now is exactly telling us that these oaths do not exist anymore. Because what does the oath say? It says that we're not allowed to rebel against the nations of the world. Al ta'iru ta'ava ad shtechpats, until we see that the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming back. And that's exactly what happened. The Umot HaOlam, the nations of the world got together and said, it is okay, you can return. And we will of course add in 48, 29th of November, when the UN, probably the only time that the UN ever decided something good for Israel, got up and said that we're permitted to return to the land of Israel, as if the UN knew this Gemara. As if they were saying, you know, the Jews have a problem, they can't build a state till we give them permission. So you know what? Here's our permission. So to me it's very funny that the argument against is actually the argument for. That, of course, is looking at Jewish history in a different way and explaining that in the past 100 years, through the amazing events of the State of Israel, which led to the State of Israel, including the amazing miracles of the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War, and our existence today in the State of Israel, are all miracles which prove the idea of Shir HaShirim, Al Ta'iru Ve'al Terut Ahava Ad She'Techpats, until Hashem is Chafetz. And I believe that Hashem is Chafetz. Rav Soloveitchik, in one of his most famous articles, called Odi Dofek, also used the story of Shir HaShirim here on a national level. I mentioned before that Rabbi Soloveitchik used it in Uvikashtem Yisham to describe man's relationship with God, but in Kol Dir Dofek, he also used Shir HaShirim to describe the relationship of the 20th century between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. I'm sure people are familiar with the article in which he really describes in a very sad way his feelings of guilt throughout the Holocaust years, in which he felt that American Jewry did not do enough to help the Jews in Europe. And he tells us that with the Hakamat HaMedina, with the finding, with the State of Israel, he says, he hears Kol Didofek, he hears the Dod knocking on the door. And he uses this idea, the parallel, this idea how man needs to listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu knocking on the door. That there is a time in Jewish history where we do not know exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, because there is no Navi. We don't know what he wants exactly. So what do we do in that kind of situation? Says Rav Soloveitchik, we have to look at the history. We have to have clear minds and to look at the events that are unfolding in front of us and to try to understand what is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. You know, I find it very amazing that Rav Soloveitchik wrote once in one of his drushas, it's printed in Chamesh Drashot, what is the reason that he became a Zionist? It's very interesting. What made him move from a total anti-Zionist household where he grew up? He grew up in a totally anti-Zionist hashkafa, ideology. And it was his decision. He wasn't brought up in a in a Tzioni family, he made a clear decision to move from the Aguda to the Mizrahi. And you know what he says? And I think it's fascinating. I don't know, sometimes people don't really pick up on this, I think, enough. That he says, because in the world of Halakha, he says, Halakha is decided by the majority. But in the world of Hashkafa, he says, we go by the historical events. And he said the historical events that are occurring in the 20th century are all proving that the way of the Mizrahi is the right way. The Hatzalah to Am Yisrael is happening in Eretz Yisrael, he says. That's what's happening. And therefore I choose to go with that ideology. And he says that through the historical events we can hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu knocking on our door. Wake up! Open up the door. And if you recall, Rav Soloveitchik mentioned six knocks on the door that are awakening us, that we should realize, we should hear the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in these events. Rav Cook, in a similar way, talks about, he explains the Gemara Masechet Shabbat that talks about questions that we will be asked when we reach the world to come. One of the questions is, "Hayim tzipita liyeshua?" Did you await salvation? And Rav Kook explains that the word tzipia does not mean just to wait and to want, but rather from the word tzofe in Hebrew, which is a scout, a person who sees from far. He uses, in today's world, very sophisticated technology to see what others are doing. And Rav Kook explains that the tzofe is not someone who just sees, but someone who tries to understand from what he sees what is occurring, what is happening. And we are asked by Kadosh Baruch Hu, we are told by Kadosh Baruch Hu that we have to litzpot liyeshua. We have to read behind the lines. We have to look into the events in front of us and to see how Yeshua is happening to us. To read between the lines. It's like, you know, I always tell my students the same story about a person who was in a parking lot, and he wanted to park his car, but there was no room. So he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you find me a parking spot right now, I promise you I will learn Daf Yomi every day from now on. That moment, a car in front of him backs out. He says, God, it's okay, thank you, I found one myself. Right? So according to this idea, Rav Soloveitchik is saying to us, Kol Yidofek, you can look at the events in front of you and say, oh, it's all coincidence, it's all happening. Or you can hear the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu knocking on the door. And in a similar way, Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, in the Sefer HaKuzari, in the beginning of Ma'amar Shini, in the second Ma'amar, in which he describes Eretz Yisrael, he talks about Eretz Yisrael, how beautiful it is, what an amazing place it is, and at some point, the king of HaKuzari says to him, excuse me, Chaver, you are talking about Eretz Yisrael and how great it is, but yet we are sitting in a coffee shop in Spain. Why aren't you there? And that is when Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi probably reddens in his face and he quotes Shir HaShirim. And he says, well, this goes back to times of Bayit Sheni. This goes back to the prophecy of Zechariah, who prophesies that Roni v'simchi bat Zion ki ineni ba v'shachanti b'tochech neum Hashem, says the Navi, that the second temple, when we return to Eretz Yisrael, will be greater than the first temple. But we know what happened, says the Kuzari. Very few people returned to Eretz Yisrael. The majority stayed behind Chutz La'aretz. And he quotes Shir HaShirim, Ani Shina V'libi El Kol Didofek. He says that Shir HaShirim is referring here to Bayit Sheni. Why Dafa Kol Didofek? Very simple. Because very similar to the declaration of Balfour, there was a declaration at the end of the Tanakh, days of Ezra, the declaration of Koresh. King Koresh gets up and says, ladies and gentlemen, God gave me the power to return the people of Israel back to Eretz Yisrael. And we can just imagine the people at the time living in Bavel listening to the news and hearing that this non-Jewish king gets up and tells everyone about redemption. They probably think to themselves, what does this king know about redemption? We want Mashiach to come. We want redemption. We want Ge'ulah. Not some kind of, you know, Goyish king telling us what to do. And Yishayahu, in Perek Mem Hei, Yishayahu says, Ko amar Hashem le'mishicho le'koresh. Koresh is called Mashiach in Tanakh, because Hashem is using him as a tool for bringing redemption to the Jewish people. And the Kuzari says that Koresh was kol dodi dofek. Again, the idea of Koresh was the knocking on the door. It wasn't a Navi who got up and said, Hashem saying to you right now, get up and move to Israel. But rather, he used Koresh as a means to tell the people that it is time to come to Eretz Yisrael. It was just a knock on the door. But again, the Ra'aya was too scared. The Ra'aya said, okay, I'm coming, but wait a few moments. I can't make it yet. I'm not ready yet. And by the time the Ra'aya came to the door, the Dod wasn't there anymore. It says the Kuzari that we missed opportunity. We missed opportunity of Bayit Sheni, and that's why we're still here today. There might be other opportunities in Jewish history where the Dod is knocking on the door and somehow we're not ready exactly for Ge'ula. And let's skip throughout those historical events to the days of Yom Yerushalayim. And like I said to you before, to the minhag that exists of reading Shir Shimon Yom Yerushalayim. And obviously one can take from this minhag the idea that firstly, it seems that on the day of Sheshet, on the day of the Six-Day War, Tavchet Biyar, Tavshin, Kavzayin, it seems that on that day, Hashem revealed His love to the Jewish people. Out of nowhere, suddenly, Hashem says to us, I'm ready. Out of nowhere, Hashem appeared to us. Yerushalayim fell into our hands, as I mentioned last Shiur. Hashem says, I'm ready for the Jewish people. Come and join me. And could it be that in some tragic historical way, we may have missed opportunity again? Rav Meidan, when I heard him once give a shir about this idea, he said that when he was a young boy, he was already, I think, in the army or a yeshiva at the time when the Six-Day War occurred, and he said that that moment we heard, we as yeshiva boys thought that Mashiach, that was it, that was Mashiach. We heard the stories, the events happening, we all thought that was it. In a few moments, it'll all be over. And I think, I imagine many people felt the same feeling at the time in the Six-Day War, that, ototo, that's it, it's all over, Mashiach is here, this is it, Yerushalayim, Har HaBayit, it's falling to our hands. It truly was like a biblical moment. And kol didofek, the knocking on the door, and I don't know what God wanted from us at the time, but can it be that there was a bit of a missed opportunity at the time too? I'm not sure, but maybe reading Shir HaShirim on that day shows the problem of Geulah of today that we live in. We talk about Chazal the Geulah on one hand. We talk about how we believe that the events occurring in the state of Israel are part of some kind of redemption process. But at the same time, we know that we're very far from it. We know that things are not simple. Things are not so easy. War still goes on. We still do not have a Beit HaMikdash. But I would say that reading Shir HaShirim, therefore, in some funny way, really may symbolize the relevant feelings that we have of, on one hand, Ge'ula, on another hand, missing something. And that's maybe why it is a proper thing, it's a proper minhag to read the Megillah Shir HaShirim on Yom Yerushalayim. Thank you very much.